We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Dan Weber's going to hang out and talk a little football with us. I've got a couple of clips I want to play for him since it's topical and this could be fun. First, I thought this was... I have often thought this and thought about this. Since the Houston Texans were up 24-0 at Arrowhead in the divisional round, at that moment, you could have thought, you know, this is the first of many showdowns between the Chiefs and the Texans and Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. And just think of what has happened to that organization since melting down and losing after getting up 24-0 at Arrowhead against the Chiefs. This is the voice of the Houston Texans, Mark Vandermeer. He was on Radio Row with Jason Anderson and Todd Lebo down in Houston. And he talks about how the fortunes and the fates of the Chiefs and Texans changed after that comeback win by Kansas City.
Well, the great organizations, when they have a quarterback like the Chiefs, know how to reload around the quarterback, which is what the Chiefs have done. I'm sure if you look at the roster that took the field that day for Kansas City in 2019 in that playoff game, and look at what they're going to put on the field opening day, it's
vastly
completely
different. Oh, yeah.
But to the outside world, it kind of, Mahomes is there and Andy Reid, it kind of looks the
Travis
same,
Kelce,
right?
It's the look same
at,
guys, yeah.
Look at the Patriots all those years with Brady. It's the Patriots. They've rolled that thing over constantly. Every NFL roster has to roll over like 80% every 3 years or so. But if you have a few core pieces, and especially the quarterback, you can make it. With the Texans, the next year, they traded DeAndre Hopkins in the offseason. They don't get off to a good start at all. Bill O'Brien gets fired, and everything just goes into the abyss, right? And all the Watson stuff plays out. So, you know, clearly a tale of two different directions with those organizations, and Watson now in Cleveland. We'll see how it goes. But, you know, the Texans are in start-over mode. And I think, you know, even though they were 3-3, well, they had a tie, so 3-13-1 last year, there were some seedlings there. Jalen Petrie. You know, you have Damian Pierce at running back. You have some players, and then you have the 12 draft picks this year, tied for most in the league. And then you have the acquisitions I talked about, among others. I think they've got a good start going here, but they're not the Chiefs. No way. Even though the Texans stopped Mahomes in overtime in that game this regular season, and I thought we should hang a banner like the Colts would do. Stopped Mahomes in overtime when he got the ball first. It was an amazing thing. And then they turned it over and lost the game.
Quarterback getting drafted in the second pick?
I would assume so. You know, I interviewed Callan Hannah-McNair at the owners' meetings this week, and I said, I didn't ask the question directly. I said, hey, when you are asked the question, because I get asked it all the time, how do you answer it? You know, that's the way of asking it without asking it. But they were being funny, and they said that they were working over the owner of the Panthers trying to find out who he's picking. Yeah. I would assume so, but you never know because, look, the draft is an inexact science. You never know what these guys are thinking.
All right. One more clip. Just because Charlie Weiss, gave his take on which team makes the most sense for Lamar Jackson.
This is a guy who goes on any team that doesn't have a frontline quarterback and makes him better right off the bat. I'm looking at potential candidates, and I see really one right now based off of what you're hearing coming out of these buildings. And that's if he's not in Baltimore, I think the team that probably makes the most sense is Indianapolis.
Okay, so that leads me into hearing about Deshaun Watson now and everything that Cleveland gave up for him, but it's up in the air whether or not they're going to get the return that's going to justify what they gave up. And then the Colts had just this revolving door of veteran quarterbacks, and none of them worked out. And then you've got Lamar Jackson, who apparently, I mean, he's available. He's there if you want him. Or you can go down the road with all these young quarterbacks that we are talking about that, honestly, there's none of them I feel strongly about. There's no quarterback in this class. So they get him, they're good. That's the guy. And there might be one of them. I just don't feel about, you know, that way. So I'm almost like, if you're the Colts or one of these teams that might be close, or like one of these NFC teams where the NFC is all wide open behind Philadelphia, I mean, why wouldn't you go after Lamar Jackson as opposed to taking a chance with one of these guys you feel okay about? I don't know. What do you think about that? Because, you know, every day, this is what we're watching. There it is, Stan. Lamar Jackson, Lamar Jackson, Lamar Jackson. Would you take a shot at one of these young guys we've been talking about in the draft? Or would you take a shot at trying to acquire Lamar Jackson?
Those are two bad choices.
But if you're desperate for a quarterback, that's, you know what I mean?
You've got to find a quarterback, but I don't believe in the quarterbacks. Bryce Young knows how to win. He's an accurate thrower. He is just so small. So I guess he's the one guy I would believe in. Stroud throws the ball very well. I could see him developing into a better quarterback. But these guys who are non-factors in college, I would never move them up the draft board. Mitch Trubisky, what did he do at North Carolina? Nothing.
One year, you know?
And then he got drafted super high in the pros, and he did nothing. I mean, he was okay, but he wasn't in an elite level at all. So I think you're going to run into the same program. Now, I think Lamar Jackson is a very good subject because he is a unique athlete, a unique quarterback. He has experience. He's won an MVP. He doesn't have an agent. There's so many factors here, but I will go back to this. Let's go back to the football field, Stephen. With Lamar Jackson, I think you win in the pros by throwing from the pocket accurately under pressure. Playoff games, big games, third and seven. Can you read the defense, maneuver through the pass rush, throw the ball through the arms, and throw it accurately? Not throw interceptions. Can you make that play at that time? And I don't think that's a strength of Lamar Jackson's at all. So I see a real reason why people don't want to overpay for him. We also got to step in with the whole philosophy with the salary cap. If your quarterback takes too much of the salary cap, can you get enough athletes and good players around him to win? That's one of the big debates, because if you give up draft picks, pay Lamar Jackson a ton of money, will there be good enough players around him versus a young guy? I think that basic argument can be discussed all the time. And anybody who says, no, you need to win with rookie-type contracts, not overpaying your quarterback, I'm okay with that. I think that has a lot of substance. But finding the right quarterback is a big deal to me. But I'm very tentative, if I'm a fan of other teams, of saying Lamar Jackson could fit into our team. Baltimore has run an offense that fits with his skill set. They've done a good job. They kind of bought in. Their backup quarterback even plays in a style that's like Lamar. It makes a lot of sense. The Ravens are a winning organization. They've been able to find ways to win with Lamar Jackson and without Lamar Jackson, and I think that they're going to be fine. I'd love to see him get together and have him play and him make a lot of money, but right now, would I want to give up a couple of draft picks, high draft pick, first-round picks, to get Lamar Jackson? No, he scares the heck out of me, not only because of the salary cap hit. Guys, you got to throw from the pocket. And no one wants to talk about that. They're talking about what? Guaranteed contracts. He doesn't have an agent. The NFL's colluding against him because they don't want to have guaranteed contracts. They're mad at the Cleveland Browns owner for doing it with Deshaun Watson and all those kind of things. I think it's less about that than, do you think Lamar Jackson can throw from the pocket and win on third and seven?
No. No. And I also, to add to what you're saying there, Stan.
One caveat, it depends on who he's also, depends on who he's throwing to, what are his weapons. You know, what's the talent around
him? But I think that goes back to what you said first, and I think this is a huge part of it. In the NFL, every team has limited resources. In Major League Baseball, there's a few teams that don't have limited resources. The Dodgers can spend whatever they want to spend. And there's nothing to stop them from doing it, and there seems to be no limit the New York Mets can spend as much as they want to spend. There's no limit, and it doesn't even cost them anything. But in the NFL, there are limited resources for everybody. You only have so much money in the salary cap that you can spend, and you only have so many draft picks that you can use. And one of the ways to maximize those limited resources is to get draft picks that are cheap to perform well. That's what the Chiefs did on defense last year, right? And all these young rookies on rookie contracts going out and performing. Lamar Jackson is a valuable quarterback to me when he's not taking up too many resources. Because then you can use those resources to go out and get maybe wide receivers he can throw to, or really good offensive linemen to block, and a running game that can go around him, a really good defense, so that you can use that ball control style to win regular season games. By the way, he didn't do much in the postseason when he was with Baltimore. But now you're talking about taking up a whole lot of those limited resources to bring him in. The resources being money that goes against your salary cap and draft picks that you got
to
give up.
To trade for him.
Yeah, so you're like...
Or if you sign him to... He's available to be signed with the franchise tag he has. Any team could sign him now, but you give up, what, two number ones to have the right to get the contract. And the Ravens can match it.
Yeah, yeah. And so, to me, like, do I want Lamar Jackson on my team on a rookie contract if I don't have a good quarterback? Yes. If he's cheap and I can build a team around him, awesome. Do I want to give up? Like Patrick Mahomes is worth the resources, right? He is so great. He makes everybody on the team so much better that it's worth spending a whole lot of money on him and giving up some draft picks. I don't feel that way about Lamar Jackson. I feel like he might be able to win some games with him if he's cheap and you can put a good team around him. I don't think you want to put, I personally would not want to give up that many resources for Lamar Jackson.
See, that goes down that logic stream of some people believe you're only going to win when you're on not overpaying your quarterback, so you can pay for other resources mm-hmm. under the salary cap. Some people believe that. I don't I respect that, and I think it's a good factor to balance in, and I'm okay with that being an advantage. But if you got the right quarterback, I have no problem paying Patrick Mahomes.
Right.
He covers about 23% of the Chiefs' salary cap, which is one of the highest in the NFL. No problem. I'd still rather have Patrick Mahomes. Move him up to 30%.
Great choice.
I'd still rather have Patrick Mahomes. So my mind is open
right.
to say, let's get this quarterback if he's the right guy. But if you're a Baltimore, if you're an Indianapolis Colts fan, Steven, are you excited about getting Lamar Jackson? I mean, do you think he's going to take you over the hump?
I would probably find a way to talk myself into it because I'm so sick of all the quarterback. You know what I mean?
And like, it's been a rotating door of old guys.
Right. I would talk myself into it from a position of desperation.
Okay, let's ask the question another way, because I know Nate and I have said this often, and we'll bring you in on this. Oftentimes the best way to answer a question is, what do you think if you're the rival? You know, what do you think about that coach coming and being the Chargers coach or that player? So in the AFC, when you're the Chiefs, every team's a rival. Because
mm-hmm.
getting to the Super Bowl is getting hard through the AFC, right? So the Colts can be thought of as a rival. Are you worried about the Colts if they sign Lamar?
Like, what's the alternative, though, I guess?
He stays at Baltimore. It would be a simple one.
Like, for the Colts?
I think the alternative... Oh, for the Colts.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying, you're a Chiefs fan now. Are you worried about the Colts? You heard that he moved away from the Ravens, and now he's the Colts quarterback.
Not in the postseason, but like in the... I mean, the tough matchup of the regular season, but again,
Lamar Jackson only scares me here if he goes to the Patriots. Because I think Bill Belichick can dribble with his left hand, his right hand, stand on his head. I think he's the one guy who could utilize what Lamar brings, the excellence, and limit the negativity and launch his whole team into a confidence level where they think they can win it all. But other than going to an elite coach like that, I don't think Lamar Jackson is a non-factor to me where he ends up, unless he's at Baltimore. They become dangerous because their whole system's set up for him to be their quarterback. They get the Lamar Jackson program. They have an offense that's set up that way. They still aren't in the Chiefs' range, but I respect their organization. You move him to any other team in the league, and I don't even think about 5 seconds. When Aaron Rodgers becomes a Jet, I do think about the Jets. I don't know about you guys, but I think Aaron Rodgers is making a difference with the Jets. If Lamar Jackson goes to the Jets, I'm going like, yeah, okay. fine. They'll be dangerous in the regular season, and they'll beat you once in a while. But they don't really scare me as a team that's going to fight the Chiefs for the best. If the Jets get Aaron Rodgers, he could launch himself up like Joe Burrow did with the Bengals. Do you think that? I mean, are you worried about the Jets and what they got in place, or do they not have enough winning pedigree?
No, I mean, they have a terrific young running back, an assortment of young wide receivers, tremendous weapons, a fantastic defense. I like the coach a lot. Oh, yeah, I mean, they're ready to roll, you know.
Are they ready to roll if Lamar's their quarterback or only Aaron?
See, here's the thing. I think they'd be a really good team in, and maybe this is me on the fence, in the regular season, just like the way I felt about when he was at his peak with Baltimore. But in the postseason, I don't think he can win with Lamar Jackson in the postseason. I mean, of course, hey, look.
This is like a light blue blood. Baltimore, just a regular season good, yeah. not
Baltimore
good.
Won a championship with Trent Dilfer. I mean, you could win. I mean, yeah, if everything went the right way.
So
I
guess you got an all-world defense.
Right. Like, but is the Jets an all? Are the Jets going to be an all-world
defense?
Are they so good?
No, defense. They're not like one of the greatest of all time.
Well, maybe just a distinction. I'm more worried about Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
In 2023, than I am Lamar Jackson.
Yes.
And
right.
Lamar's younger. He's already won an MVP. He's not surly and weird like Aaron in that sense. So why wouldn't I appreciate him more? Why am I not more of a Lamar Jackson fan? It's easy for me to say. I have nothing against how he's handling his situation financially or whatever he wants to do, asking for a trade. It's that he doesn't throw from the pocket accurately, consistently when the game's on the line. He never has, and that's why they haven't won in the playoffs like they should.
Aaron Rodgers throws from out of the pocket more accurately than almost every quarterback in NFL history. I mean, I think he's got the greatest arm talent in NFL history. I still like the Chiefs over the Jets, but the Jets are a bigger threat, you know, because the thing about Aaron Rodgers is he might be able to set all of his weirdness aside. And the team, and it might be because he's in a new place, the team's just so excited to have him there that it doesn't become the way it was in the end in Green Bay, which I think was a guy that was disconnected from his team. You know, and so maybe they're like, hey man, we got Aaron Rodgers, this guy is a Hall of Famer, and let's all get on board and let's all love it. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if his aloofness and his and all the other stuff.
Yeah, he ain't setting that aside. They're going to have to get used to it.
Yeah.
That's
no, I mean, the
duck.
Team's almost going to have to set it aside. Like, they're just going to be like, hey, whatever you want. You know, it's Aaron Rodgers. We're following. And we're happy to do it because we've sucked for a long time, and now you can make us good. But I think it still matters.
If I were Lamar Jackson, you know, he's his own agent, I would be pressing anybody who would talk to me about saying, would you rather have me and the issues of getting up draft choices and a lot of money to me, or this rookie class? I mean, really,
right,
there should
right.
be no comparison.
Yeah, he's at least proven he can win games at the NFL level and put up numbers and all that. I do think another thing that hurts about Lamar Jackson, though, is it's 2 years in a row he hasn't been able to finish the season. You know, and that was the concern with him. When you're a guy that runs the ball 15 times a game as a quarterback, you just don't see that even in today's NFL. And everybody wondered when that happened. Okay, how long can he play this way? And he does a pretty good job of avoiding contact and all that, but still, how long can he play this way? And then now 2 years in a row, he's not able to finish the season. If you already had that question mark in your head beforehand, that certainly doesn't make that question mark go away.
Yeah, and he doesn't even take that many hits.
Right.
He and Kyler Murray know how to slide, and they both got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
They avoid hits. They have unbelievable speed and athleticism to gain yardage, hurt you, and still slide down and not take a hit, and they both got hurt.
That's, you're still playing against the biggest, strongest, fastest, meanest dudes on the planet. You know, like,
right.
it's safer than it used to be, but you're still playing against those guys. So,
anyway, the quarterbacks have just become so intriguing because everyone is just doing anything they can and overstretching to move the, you know, guys that should be in a third round are now talked about in the top 10. You know, so Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, they've turned this world upside down. Everyone's looking for the next one.
Is there one guy you think of the rookie class that you at least you like separate from the others that has the best chance to be a star?
I would just say Young, because he understands football, has a good knack of where to move in the pocket, throws the ball accurately, has proven that he can win. You know, just look at the K-State game alone. K-State really put a good first quarter performance together and put Alabama's back to the wall, and all he did was light it up for the next quarter and a half with dimes all over, deep balls, short balls. But it is scary. I'm telling you, when you're investing this much money, when I stood next to him and interviewed him,
right,
he is super small. Like, he is basketball thickness, right? I mean, he's not thinner than a lot of basketball players and not very tall. And so I did just put giant question marks in my mind going, I want to watch the tape. That's what I believe in. And I believe in talking to these guys and listening to them. He's A-plus so far down the line until you get to his size. And you're going, man, he is little.
And you're not, you don't believe in the tools of Anthony Richardson?
No, not at all. Not at all. But I just feel sorry for the team that drafts him.
They said his floor now could be Seattle at five because they're enamored with him.
I'm telling you, I gave, if you didn't hear me before, I said he might be the next Josh Allen. I do not want to finalize the statement, but if my team were drafting him, I would be shaking my head going, this is not going to work.
He'd have to go someplace like Seattle where he's not expected to play, learn behind a veteran like Geno Smith with a great attitude. And clearly Geno Smith would be the – I think he'd be the kind of guy like an Alex Smith that would take a young quarterback under his wing, and it has to be the right veteran.
Here's a spot for him. Baltimore Ravens.
Well, yeah, that's right.
If Lamar leaves
– because the system's already in place.
We have a system in place for athleticism and running, and we'll protect you because we're so well coached. Our organization knows how to win.
That's exactly right.
With any type of quarterback – he could have some success, because even though Patrick Mahomes is off the charts unbelievable, I believe the super extra layers of icing on the cake are because of Andy Reid. If he would have gone to the Cleveland Browns and been coached as poorly and been around teams that don't know how to win, Patrick Mahomes would be dangerous, but I do not think he'd be dominant like he is. I think it's the mixture of what he brings plus Andy Reid, okay, and the Chiefs organization. You take Richardson's athletic ability and what his potential is, and put him with a winning organization like the Ravens, that's his chance.
Right.
So that's the most optimism I have about him. If he gets drafted by the Ravens, I give him a chance. But everybody else, I think you're just going to be laughing in 5 years going, why did we ever think he was going to be a good pro? Because I do College Game Day every Saturday. I'm on here with you guys, used to be an hour and a half, now 2 hours every Friday. Oh, wait a second.
Right.
You guys didn't shake your head yes on that one. And I never think about this guy as a Florida quarterback. Never thought about him being dangerous. Oh, man, they're playing Florida this week. Watch out for this quarterback. No. When Joe Montana played for Notre Dame, he was dangerous. When Brady played for Michigan, he was incredibly good. Go back and watch the tape now of Michigan football. When you watch Patrick Mahomes at Texas Tech and he's throwing for 500 yards and scoring 50 points, he was incredible. These guys didn't come out of the blue. They know how to quarterback. And then they take it to the NFL where it's even harder. Why would I ever think Kentucky or Florida's quarterback is going to be great in the NFL next year? No reason at all.
Now you got me thinking Lamar's going to go to New England. Good God. Hey,
Lamar to New England, right. Richardson to Baltimore, and Rodgers to the Jets.
Yeah,
it is game on for the AFC next
the
year.
AFC oh, my goodness. Mike Boddicker's here. You've got him all fired up. And we'll find out what he's going to yell
favorites.
At us about. That's hey, Stan, thanks for hanging out and talking football with us an extra half an hour. That was awesome.
Okay, thanks,
that
guys.
That was Stan Weber. We will find out what Mike Boddicker is angry about now on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Oh, my God, that's Mike McFarland's music.
My God.
Mike McFarland only had two fewer hits than the Royals yesterday, so we thought we'd have him on the show. Good morning, Mac. How are you?
It just shows you spring training to get in shape. Everyone's goo-goo gaga over the, you know, electric numbers, but when reality hits, everything gets tuned up a little bit. Look, going into that game, you know, we as American leaguers could really care less about the Miami Marlins, but you don't trade the American League batting champ and not get anything in return, but Pablo Lopez can flat-out pitch, and I knew they were going to be in for it. You know, the wind blowing out, batting practice, I'm sure balls were just in the fountains right and left. You tend to get a little bit big as a right-handed hitter, and maybe we saw a little bit of that, but Pablo Lopez can flat-out play, and he showed his stuff yesterday pretty well. So, tough matchup day one.
I'm glad you said that, because he was I was telling Nate, because I have, you know, I do some ridiculous things with my free time. So I had made a list of veteran pitchers that I was hoping the Royals would try to acquire within their range before they went out and signed Jordan Lyles. And Pablo Lopez was on top of the list. But like you said, it took the AL batting champ to get him, so the price was steeper than even I anticipated. But, man, and that's why you see how much would we love to see him up at the top of the Royals rotation. But instead, they got to face him a whole bunch of times this year, and you're right, he was terrific. And so let's start off with my first ridiculous complaint about the Royals. It's only been game one, and so I'm already a red ass about things.
You're wound up already. That a boy.
And yeah, it's been one game, but I thought this before the game started when I looked at the lineup, and I just want to ask you, and you tell me. And it's easy to do this now because he hit into a couple of double plays yesterday, but is Melendez, is that the best option in the two-hole, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's going to be a fluid situation here the first couple of weeks when, you know, Coach Q starts to figure out who and what he really has in the season. Just figuring things out. But you got a guy, you know, that I think is going to take the step this year with the contact rate. But again, you know, he was facing a tough pitcher, kind of chased a few pitches. We got to understand that he's a swinger, likes to swing the bat, and he's going to chase some balls, and he's also going to hit some balls that are slightly out of the strike zone and do some damage with it. So, you know, day one, as far as that goes, look, let's just let them get their feet settled in the box, let them get their routine down for the regular season, you know, and that's a topic for another day, in my opinion, just going with that situation, left-handed bat, all those things to let Bobby do his running and open up some holes for MJ. I don't think it's a bad place to start, but again, it's early. Let things settle in.
Let me make you really mad. Nate isn't a fan of Bobby Witt Jr. hitting leadoff.
That one I could agree with. I do believe he's going to be four-hole type of hitter. But, you know, when you're talking about batting lineups and you see Aaron Judge hitting in the two-hole himself, you know, those are the things nowadays with on-base percentage and the steals that are going to be more prevalent this season. Yeah, I'm kind of a three-hole guy with Salvi hitting behind him. But still, right now, let things work themselves out and see how things get started.
Do you have, okay, so before we leave Melendez altogether, Mike Boddicker is not, he does not have high hopes for Melendez as a catcher. And I'll be honest with you, you know, looking at some of his defensive metrics and everything else, I thought the Royals might go with three catchers, and they decided not to keep Felix Fermin on the roster. You said that, you know, you still think there's a lot of untapped potential, and there is, as a hitter. What about Melendez as a catcher? Because since there's only two catchers on the roster, he's going to have to catch. You can't have Salvi catch. Yeah, so is he? Are you still hopeful he can develop into a serviceable, average, good defensive catcher, or like what's your concern level there?
Well, serviceable is all you're looking for because, you know, prayerfully, you're hoping Salvi stays healthy the entire year. He hasn't shown any signs of slowing down. But, again, all those metrics things and everything else, it still boils down to how do the pitchers like throwing to him. I know that they worked his tail off behind the plate during spring training, and he was doing a lot of work, from what I understand, in the off season behind home plate. Didn't look that bad, I guess, in spring training. But, yes, obviously he's a bat and a bat first. So finding a place to put him in the lineup, to use that bat, and then giving Salvi a break here and there, you know, that's going to be his main job. So as long as Salvi stays healthy and he doesn't start to wear down or break down, which at some point, my gosh, he has to, with the workload that he's had his entire career, be serviceable and get away with it and go from there.
We're visiting with Mike McFarland. Do you want me to read you the text that Mike Boddicker sent me yesterday?
Oh, for the love of God. You know, I'm off to a good start.
Yeah.
break this out right now?
He was firing this text message off to all the members of the Border Patrol. You better think long and hard before. By the way, he's standing here.
Why don't we just have him come here. Yeah,
come here. Just talk to Mike McFarland, would you? He's in here. Let me tell you something. He wasn't scheduled to be in here. He's coming in here specifically to catch Stan Weber in the hallway and just start complaining about opening day. So here we go. He's going to sit down here, Mac.
I'm minding my own business yesterday.
This is a real treat for you, I'm sure, Mac. Here's Mike Boddicker on the
Midget?
Oh, boy. Here we go.
No, here we go. What? Well, one, the fact that you're texting, I'm still going out on a limb.
No, I had my kids do it.
You press that microphone button to let Siri do your texting for you.
What's Siri?
Right.
Yeah. So what was it, Bod? What happened?
All I said was 20 strikeouts and 8 walks in the game, but it was faster. Still the same crap, but it was faster.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
And you know what Nate said, texted me back, what Whitey Herzog said.
If you're going to play horse blank, do it fast.
Mike texted me, 20 strikeouts, 8 walks total. Much better game, a lot more exciting.
So. I was watching the Yankees in their opening day game, and things really just, you know, you watch it in spring training, it seemed okay, but now that the regular season's there, holy smokes, is there a lot of stress to just get in the box and
isn't there stress? As a hitter?
I never really stepped out much, but still, I would still feel like, Jesus, crying out loud. It's like, batting practice, step in and swing.
That's, you know, there's got to be some kind of consistency to it. And I remember back when I first started, Mac, if a guy took a long time, the umpire would say, hey, here, either get in here or he's going to throw a pitch, and I'm going to call it because I don't have any strike zone. If a guy took a long time in the mound, he'd walk out to the mound and chew you out and then go tell the manager, hey, if he doesn't pick up the pace here, something's going to happen.
It's a much more sensitive ball game now, Mike. You have to understand that.
Yeah, I do understand it. But it doesn't make it better, Mac. That's a problem. We want entertainment. We want to entertain the people as players. And these guys, I feel so sorry. You get this deer in the headlight look in the pitcher's eyes, like, and they're looking around trying to see the clock. It's like they're not concentrating on what they're trying to do, the pitch they're trying to make.
Agreed, but try stepping in the box looking at the clock instead of what.
Oh, yeah, they got them everywhere. You can't miss them. They're huge.
It was, Logan Webb and Garrett Cole, they were, 24, 25 strikeouts between the two of them? That was fun.
Isn't it?
It's going to take some time to get used to, but 100%, I think the advantage is with the pitchers with all of this going on. By the way,
I agree. I do agree with you there.
All the time, the time things going on. Did you see Pete Alonso get a strike called on the batter for not hustling back to first base?
Yeah.
I'm like that. What the hell was that? The hitter's going, I didn't do anything.
So let me ask you this, because this hasn't been brought up when talking about the new rules and what we like and what we don't like. Salvi said he loves it because he said, I'm not going to catch games that are 4 hours and 15 minutes. Now I'm going to get more 2 hours and 20 minutes. This is going to add a couple of years to my career. What about that?
He's right. Well,
He's
right.
You try squatting for 4 hours. That ain't fun.
Well, I'll tell you what. Nate Kukade did that the other day, and boy, did it look painful, Mac. The whole show, he was...
4 hours.
Right.
I think there's something to be said for that. You know, Pete Alonso, get your ass back to first base. Hey. I mean, there's no fitness component to baseball. You can jog for, 90 feet.
No, we're not athletes. Don't even go there.
Well, you were a pitcher. We get that, Bod. But, Mac was he was an athlete.
Bod was the type that if the guy was out there doing the Nomar Garcia Parra toe taps, glove adjustments, Bod would sit there, hey, get your butt back in the box and take your beat.
Well, you're going to get drilled. You're going to get drilled. If you don't get in there, if you're going to him-haw around, I might as well put you at first base and get the next guy out. We're wasting time here.
By the way, here's the headline that Mike Boddicker's been waiting for, and it only took one day. Last night, the Mariners beat the Guardians 3-0, and here's the headline. Pitch clock sparks Mariners rally for 3-0 win over Guardians. See?
Yeah.
The pitch clock was MVP for the Mariners last night.
It's just like umpires. It should not be noticed.
Mm. Yeah, well, now this is – I like this because, with replay, it's taken away the ability for the managers to yell at the umpires a whole bunch. Now – this is given the chance for the umps to do the ump show. Now they get to put a strike on a guy because he doesn't hustle enough back to first.
Oh, yeah.
get the umps back involved in this thing.
Well, here's what I heard yesterday that just came out. They're talking about putting a chip in the baseballs and a chip in the bats.
Good.
Getting rid of the umpires completely. That's the new model they're thinking about.
Yeah, there we go.
So basically, it's video games.
Two seconds a pitch.
We're video games, is what we are.
Put the Oculus on, and they're going to start playing with that thing next before you know it. I don't know. There's a bunch
we still love baseball,
yesterday.
Right, Mac?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, baseball's a great game. Quit messing it up. Just make it more entertaining. Put a better product out there. Make it more entertaining. Make the players more accessible to the people.
Mic them up.
And I don't really care as long as they're accessible to the people. Well, you can't get them anyway on TV, so it doesn't matter.
step for the Royals is be more accessible.
I don't know if you guys experienced this. I had 10 different people texting me or calling me, I can't find the Royals game. Where is it at? How can I? There's people. Gary Lezak was on Facebook all pissed off, couldn't find the Royals game. I mean, so there's some truth to that.
Get the MLB package, you can get it.
Can you?
Well,
yeah,
I mean,
you actually can.
There were a whole bunch of things on another subject. I think Ronald Acuna for the Braves was on first base, and the pitcher was dumb enough to throw over twice.
Right.
You're not allowed to throw the third time.
Yeah.
Acuna stole the bag. He could have ran into left center field and been safe. He went first move. And
he stole second and third, things. Right?
So then I'll ask both of you guys this. I thought Carlos Hernandez looked really good out of the bullpen. Right, maybe that's what he could be, just a shutdown reliever, or whatever. And Rex and Tomato, he's not thinking so much, just going up there, and he's just attacking the plate, no paralysis by analysis. Can we look at that, and maybe could that help these young pitchers, where they just get up there and don't think about it so much and get to work, Mac, and then Mike, could that help some of these young pitchers that have not fulfilled their promise with the Royals?
Absolutely, and why
you're
taking Salvi off a Hall of Famer, I don't know, but still, that should not even be in their thought process.
Most of these kids can't think for themselves anyway, though. They really can't because they've been told what to throw from the time they've been little, so there's no really thought process. Basically, you're thinking location. That's all they need to do, but right now they're thinking about pitch clock as opposed to location, and end up there's a lot of balls end up down the middle. So, or they're scared and throw the ball in the dirt or wherever. But it's just hard to watch. Should be more entertaining than that.
You agree on Carlos Hernandez, though?
Him, oh, I do. Good. Yeah, I mean, I agree. That's a good spot.
Like,
for him,
that's the kind of like, yeah. You're like, ooh, okay.
Yeah.
And if it just ends up being he's a good reliever, then
I thought Greinke threw well yesterday. I was happy with the product he put out there. I mean, that's old school Zach pitching. That was good.
Yeah, Jose Quast.
Well, that's pitching, not throwing. I thought Quast was tremendous too.
Yeah,
I thought he looked really good. And again, you get that wind swirling around home plate, and those spin rates get accelerated with the wind and everything else. There was some nasty stuff going on yesterday, and that closer for the Twins. I don't know about the jug guns nowadays or whatever the hell they're using, but 102, 105, things like that. Like, come on.
It wasn't that, but he's a stud. His stuff is incredible. But like with Quas. I mean, with his arm angle and just the way the ball comes out of his hand, if he's on, it's got to be a nightmare to be in the box against him.
And yeah, here we go to spring training again. He didn't throw that well in spring.
Right.
Quast didn't. That tells you, you know, that spring training is great to get yourself in shape, but it doesn't dictate what's going to happen during the year. The guys liked what they were seeing down there, and I like that for the coaches saying that, knowing that he didn't have some great outings down there, but they liked what they saw, which tells you, okay, this is what we're going to see carry over into the regular season. That's good stuff.
Hey, Mac, Chris Bubich won the fifth starter spot, mainly because Daniel Lynch is on the IL, but Bubich did have a good last start where he struck out six, and he has committed to using the slider and, you know, making some real adjustments. What are your hopes now for Chris Bubich?
You know, soft contact is what's going to help him. There is just too much elevation, you know, overthrowing the changeup a little bit, which basically, yeah, you're right, he was fastball changeup, but when you elevate something, that's 80 miles an hour, that ball's going to get touched pretty hard. But, you know, just to change the angle of the ball coming at you as a right-handed hitter, you have to have something that you can throw on that back foot. And if he has command and control of that with a little bit of sweep and depth to it, you know, then all of a sudden you aren't able to eliminate one of the pitches as a hitter. Makes things a lot tougher. So, you know, again, things will bear out and see how he goes in his first couple of starts. You know, obviously hope Lynch gets better and is healthy soon, but still, it's one of those chances. Here's your opportunity.
Again.
Go out and do something with it.
Okay, so I'm glad you're both in here. So I want to ask you guys both this. I thought this was interesting. So Shohei Ohtani, he's calling his own pitches through a PitchCom device hidden underneath his jersey near his left shoulder. And so now you'll see him. He jabs at his armpit before each pitch.
I thought he had an itch.
Now, this was against the A's, and so insert joke here, but he threw six shutout innings against the A's, struck out 10, and just gave up two hits. Mac, as a former catcher, what do you think of Ohtani using the PitchCom device hidden underneath his jersey to call his own pitches?
Well, as a catcher, they don't have the excuse of, well, he called that pitch. That's why I got
it. Oh, Mac.
But other than that, I mean, you saw Scherzer do it. I think you're going to see more veteran pitchers do that personally. You know, that'll in itself take some of the thought process out of there, just as long as you know what's coming with those guys. But still, take all the thought process out of it. You want this pitch, go out and execute it.
The big thing, Mac, was if a pitcher and catcher are in sync, you're already almost, as a pitcher, starting, because that guy behind the dish knows exactly what the right pitch is and what you want, and it just goes so smooth. And I think that's what's missing. There's too many relays of what pitch to throw.
But you complain that these guys are always told what to do anyway. Ohtani's...
Oh, yeah, I love it. I love it.
And so,
you know what you want to throw. I mean, generally the catcher knows exactly. The hitter will dictate what the next pitch probably should be.
To give you an example, Angels reliever Ryan Tepera, he uses a device to call his own pitches, but he places it on his non-throwing wrist or forearm so he can easily see the numbers as he types them in. That's what most pitchers do. Otani uses it differently underneath his jersey, so he memorized the keypad in order to use it without seeing the numbers on the pad. Just like he's not human.
He's not human, no.
He's in the
to go back to the Bubich thing though, guys, I think you would actually find this really interesting. It ties into what we're talking about with Otani here.
Does it?
Because we've been talking about the new approach to pitching and the pitching department and everything, and I actually thought that a couple things that Bubich said surprised me, but I thought Boddicker would actually like this.
Wow.
And I said, okay, what is the biggest difference? I'm paraphrasing, but I basically said, what's the biggest difference between what you had last year and what you have this year? And I thought he was going to get into all this. Oh, man, they're teaching me all this stuff about spin rate and all these different analytic tools, and I got all this information. The two things he said was, they're simplifying things for us, and they're giving us freedom. They're letting us take control of our own careers.
That's how you learn.
And so that's what they're really doing is they're just giving them access to whatever they want. You know, like, hey, you want to learn how to throw a new pitch? Here's all the diagnostic tools we have and all the stuff that we can use, and here you go. But they're trusting the pitchers to pitch the way they think they can pitch most effectively, and they're just there to help. And I thought you would love hearing that. It sounds the opposite of what you would expect with all this stuff that they have.
Yeah, well, I like what I'm hearing there. The thing is, if a pitcher's got to commit to a pitch,
right?
Where this is what I want to throw, and all of a sudden they throw something else up there, and it's like, okay, they call it, so I got to throw it, but I don't want to because I don't. And if he's not committed on that pitch, he's either going to throw it for a ball, or he's going to make a mistake, and you see it all the time with these kids. Like I said,
how many times do you see a pitcher out on the mound, take his hat off, look at the card, here's his hot and cold zone. this guy's a dead fastball hitter. Well, I'm not supposed to throw him a fastball. You know, those type of things with young pitchers, they don't want to give them any excuses to remove you from the game or send your butt down with a young pitcher.
Yeah, I agree. Yep. They're scared of that. They are. They're scared of that.
No feel for the game, which then speeds things up. But this is where analytics come in that, well, I looked at the card, and this is the pitch I was supposed to throw, and I threw it, and he hit it 490 feet. You know, those are the things that young pitchers worry about, and it's real refreshing. You have a feel for a pitch, throw it, irregardless of what the numbers say. I like that. I like it a lot.
I'll throw a story in there. When I was a rookie, Earl Weaver had 3x5 cards, and each guy had a little thing on it. Like Ted Simmons, it said, still can still hit a fastball. Rod Carew, as slow as you possibly could throw it. And I can't remember who it was, but it says, great curveball hitter. And it scared the heck out of me because that was my bread and butter, right? So Palmer come up to me and he goes, you see the card? And I went, yeah. And he goes, because he can hit a curveball doesn't mean he can hit your curveball. Your curveball's different. And I went, oh. And I got him out with curveballs. It killed Weaver. Weaver screamed at me because I wasn't supposed to throw him breaking balls. But I got him out with curveballs. And Palmer's just grinning because those two fought back and forth. They thought it was great. But that tells you something. Because that was my bread and butter at the time. That my big sweeping curveball. And it was different. It was slower. It was faster. I mean, it was just different speeds. And I don't know if these kids understand that you can still throw that fastball, even though the cards say, first ball, fastball hitter. You can still throw a fastball. Just keep it out of his happy zone.
Throw a good one.
Yeah, throw a good one.
Well, that's it. A well-located, executed pitch, it's like, how many times Saberhagen basically fastball changed
exactly.
This guy's a dead red fastball hitter. Well,
he ain't seen Sabe's fastball yet. Yeah, right. Exactly.
And Mac, before we let you go, if you would please, could you describe the experience of catching Mike Boddicker?
Wet Kleenex?
He just slammed the phone down.
Hello, Mike. Are you there?
Yeah. No comment?
Wet Kleenex. You caught me with a wet Kleenex, didn't you, Mac?
Oh, gosh, that means that your glove sounds like a pillow when you're tapping the ball. There is no sound.
No.
How often would Bod shake you off?
I didn't shake. Not very often.
Yeah, remember, he was like 62 years old, and I was 21, 22.
There it is.
So,
right.
You know, obviously, I'd stick my fingers down and go, curveball? You know, question mark?
We were pretty much in sync most of the time, Mac. Don't lie to these people.
Well, the one thing you do as a young catcher is learn real quick not to throw pitches based on, well, if I'm the batter, I'm looking for this pitch. That doesn't work. It's always your pitcher's strength, 100%. And,
yep.
You know, you could stick anything down with Bod because he would just alter his arm slot, his arm angle, and things like that, and create different spins with it, which you know, was not fun.
So basically, you're telling everybody I got by with a lot of crap.
You would make your 87 mile an hour fastball look like 99.
You know, and still doing it to this day. So
yeah, a lot of crap.
That's Mike McFarland and Mike Boddicker. Hey Mac, thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
All right. Look forward to it, boys. Have a good weekend.
Mike Boddicker.
I'm sorry. Interrupt Mac's segment. I just came in to see you guys. I wanted to see Stan.
You wanted to complain in person about opening day.
No, I did not. I wanted to see Stan. I was listening to him this morning, listening to all the stuff. And, you know, Stan Weber's one of my favorites.
You love Stan.
I do.
That's Mike Boddicker. We'll be right back after this on WHB.